Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with your host, Scott Dudley, and yours truly, Maria Wyatt. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for joining us again.
I also have a phone number here at the station. It's 337-8874.
It's been a busy week, huh?
It's been very
When you got to look at the wall to get the radio, to get the phone number after you've been doing it for 6 years, it kind of speaks to how much fun we're having. Lovely. Welcome. Hey, we got a cool show for you. We're going to jump right in. I've got a couple of guests for you. I know Andy Wells.
Everybody knows Andrew.
Bianca Soriano. I was going to go there. I was like 90% sure. And you guys are playing the most famous game of all time, by the way, which is we haven't decided which one of you is going to speak first, and there's only one microphone, and you're playing like hot potato with it right now, kind of going. Anyhow, you're both mental health rehabilitation technicians, correct? With Imperial County Behavioral Health, and you both work for Children's Services, also correct, right?
Right.
Okay, and we're going to talk about, you know, one of the things that's kind of cool, I think, in how we're developing as an organization is we're starting to have certain types of specific models for managing certain types of behavioral health issues with certain populations of people, and that's kind of where we're going to go today. Bianca, why don't we start with you, and you can go ahead and tell us what you're doing and who you're doing it for, and ask away. Again, 337-8874 if you want to give us a call and ask us questions while we're going.
Well, I've been working on a model that we've been doing for kids with ADHD. It's only for kids that have a primary diagnosis of ADHD, and it's a PIP program, which stands for Performance Improvement Project.
Hey, you know how you've been in the business too long?
How?
When you say ADHD and it's a word, not a acronym.
Oh, okay, well, ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder.
There you go. Is that fairly common with kids? I mean, is that...
Yes, it's, I think, probably the most common diagnosis that we have with kids.
Okay.
It's a program that was developed for kids with ADHD, that have a primary diagnosis of ADHD. But the kids that are specifically picked are picked by the state, the ones that were... using more services that had, a lot more higher billing clients that were using a lot more services that needed a lot more intensive services.
Why is that? Because they had so many services and they were not improving, or
right? Kind of like, yeah, like that. They've been using a lot of the services and they haven't really, you know, been
progressed
from. And so we, even kids that have been progressing, because kids that I have already been working with and they were, put on the list, we still have to ask and give those parents that option if they want to do the program or not, because it is optional. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working on this for maybe 4 or 5 months, and we do attend supervision with our licensed clinical social worker once a week for 2 hours, and we present our cases. The model itself is based on 10 visits. The first 5 or 6 are weekly. You go every single week to the home, and you work with the parent, you work with the client, or the child. The next 2 visits are biweekly, so every other week, and then the last 2 visits will be monthly.
Okay, so kind of like it answers what the state wanted, it sounds like, because it sounds like you've got these children with attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, primary disorder, which in terms of pathology, I guess, is that, we know it's the most common. Is it typically considered more or less severe than the other disorders? Or you know, why would the state be concerned about high-end ADHD as opposed to some other type of childhood disorder? Or is there just a lot of it in our system?
Or is it, yeah, the prevalence?
I think for the most part is that it's very prevalent in our system, but at the same time, the ADHD kids were You know, they were getting all sorts of different types of services, but the I would say the outcomes were always inconsistent. You know, sometimes these kids will get better, you know, pretty much within a couple months of treatment through medication support, and they would be, you know, they would sometimes even transition out of our system to their primary care physician. But then we were noticing that we had a trend with other populations of the ADHD kids that were that would come into our system, and they would kind of make really minimal progress, and then they would leave because the parents would become discouraged, child would become discouraged, the school would become discouraged. Then they'd come in with even more severe problems, and it was, you know, they would be given back to us as far as, okay, we need to do something immediately for this child. He's at risk of retention. He's, he's getting into fights daily at school. He can't sit down in his class. He's always in the office.
And when I was doing my counseling, I had a lot of kids who were ADHD and using drugs.
Yes, that does occur as well.
A lot of them.
Yeah, it does occur as well. So these kids would get
high levels of service.
Very high levels of service. We're talking about everything from the drug and alcohol service.
Throw the book at them.
Yeah. Counseling. They would have, the mental health rehab tech services. They would, you know, even sometimes they would end up getting TBS services because they would be at risk. Therapeutic behavioral services in order to try and prevent them from going to placement through probation or through 26.5 IEP services.
So now, does it tend to break itself into those two categories as cleanly as that, or is it a continuum? So is there like this minor or relatively minor problem that kind of responds quickly to some medication and maybe some structure versus these more severe kids that are really resistant to any types of interventions?
Right.
So is it like a line between the two, or is there really two different populations, and you see these kids come along and say, oh, it's one of those types of more difficult cases, possibly?
You know, I think at the same time, I think the state's trying to determine as far as what the difference is between those two populations, because we do have the one population that seems to immediately respond and immediately, you know, are reintegrated. And then we have the other population that seems super resistant.
Why is that? I mean, is there any factors that contribute to that?
Well, I know some of the stuff, especially with the model that we're using right now, the performance improvement project stuff. We're trying to improve not only, you know, the child's ability to cope with the attention deficit disorder, but also the family's ability to cope with the disorder, like different different improvements that need to be made in the home structure, some ideas for school structure, mm-hmm. ways that the child actually is allowed to communicate with the parents and as the, you know, with the family as a whole, make them mm-hmm. not only just a member of the family, but an active member of the family, someone that's spotlight is on and not just on because they're messing up at school, you know, and everyone's.
So part of this sounds like the severity of the disorder, but also part of it sounds like some of the environmental factors associated mm-hmm. with coping and
right.
managing it.
Family is important.
Okay. Right. What I wanted to say also about the model is that it also helps with a lot of the family structure, like Andrew was saying, and it doesn't just involve just the child and the parent, but it also involves, like, the whole family. We have one of the visits includes a family meeting where we have a special form we give the parents. We go over it with the parents. We give each of the children in the family a chance to talk. Most of the families that we work with are single-parent families, so, you know, a lot of the times the mom or the dad are really overwhelmed with their kids, and especially with the hyper kids that we have, the ADHD kids, they can be a lot bigger handful. And so we help with the structure of the family, we help with the communication between the parent and the child. We give homework to the parent and the child to do, you know, for the next week that we come back. We check it, and that's why it's also short term. It's not, you know, one of those year-long programs. It's just based on 10 visits. So we want to make it short-term and very intensive.
So go in and get some work done. Mm-hmm. Now, for people who may or may not know what a child with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder might look or act like, what do your kids look like when they come in for services? What kind of behaviors do they do?
Are they jumping off the wall, climbing on the walls?
Sometimes I have difficulties parenting, and if there's something I can blame it on, I'm ready to go there.
Well, there's two different types of attention deficit disorders. One is the inattentive type, and there's one that's hyperactive. And actually, there's three, because there's one that's inattentive and hyperactive. Mostly boys are the hyperactive ones that we've seen. And they usually are very fidgety in their seat. They lose their focus very easily. They get distracted very easily. They usually have to be getting up and walking around. They do tend to have a lot more energy. Usually at night for a bedtime, it's hard for them to fall asleep.
So if they came home from school and I said, okay, do your homework, then why don't you stop and eat a short snack, then I'd like you to clean your room and take the dog out and give the dog food and water. And then I went and watched my soap opera.
Your novela.
Sounds like I wouldn't get much.
Say it, the
much,
truth, Scott.
Okay.
Your novela. My soap opera. Novela.
Oh, it sounds like I wouldn't get much result out of that. Is that kind of what we're looking at here?
Well, let me see. Well, yes and no. It makes the parent a little bit more active in monitoring some of these behaviors and stuff. But,
So I couldn't just give you, like, six things to do and walk away.
Yeah, right. There's things that the parent is responsible for doing during the day with that child to kind of sustain the treatment.
In this model.
Yes. Well, and for me, I'm performing this model outside of the performance improvement project. I have a multiple diagnosis caseload. I have kids with mood disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, and attention deficit disorder. So I'm working with those different populations, but still applying aspects of the model to aiding those children as well. So it's and as far as how we do that is we're working with that communication. So that these kids, with the impulsivity, something that's very common amongst those three.
What's that look like?
The impulsivity looks like a child who does something and really has no idea why they did it. It just all of a sudden becomes a thing that they did, and yet there's no trail of thought between, oh, there's something over there, and having that thing that's over
there. So they're like walking back to their bedroom to do the homework, and they see a bookcase, and it's like, oh, look, bookcase, let's climb.
Yeah, exactly. Or on their way to do their homework, and all of a sudden they're looking for a toy that they lost 2 months ago underneath their bed,
Okay, so some of that may be part and parcel of being a child.
Yeah.
Spontaneousness.
Right.
Yeah. But if it happens to the degree that the homework never gets done, or that the parent has to, like, hawk over the shoulder of the kid and say, no, next problem, stop looking at the wall.
Right. Yeah, it's when it definitely interferes with the home environment and the school environment as far as something that we can measure, the academic-wise, no homework's coming in. Okay. Why is that no homework coming in? He's becoming highly distracted during homework time.
Do you also work with the schools?
Well, as case managers, that's one of our primary focuses, is the child in the classroom. What's going on in the classroom, and how can we either modify the classroom to enhance their treatment, or how can we teach the child to cope better in a classroom setting.
So what I hear, it's working with, the family is very important. I mean, that you have to have, the family members have to be cooperative, willing to do the, whatever you, the directions, follow the directions or monitor their child and be fully invested.
Yeah, it takes a It takes a great amount of commitment from the parents.
I thought you were going to say it takes a village to raise a child and say, hey, I've heard of that.
No, it takes a really big commitment from the parents to help their child improve and, you know, decrease their impairments. And even with the school, I've worked with a lot of teachers, and even with the teachers, you need a lot of commitment from them as well. Especially for the types that, you know, aren't bringing their homework, and it's not because they aren't doing it, but because they forget to take it out of their backpacks, or they lose it in their binder of a mess because they're very disorganized, so their binder's probably, you know, papers popping out of everywhere.
Or they do it and forget to bring it back.
Or that. So, you know, the teachers, you know, have to give them several reminders, you know, did you turn your homework in? Did you turn your homework in?
And there's such consequences for that. I mean, if you don't turn your homework in, what is it, a check mark? Is it recess on the wall?
Right.
You know, is
sometimes,
it
you know,
some sort of public
suffer.
Ostracization? You know, the teachers, you didn't bring back your homework. Boom, something bad happens.
Mm-hmm. Their grades will suffer. Mm-hmm. You know, and then all of a sudden the parents get a letter home saying, you know, that all these zeros that he hasn't been turning in homework.
Ooh, how's the old self-esteem doing, huh?
So, yeah, and then, you know, the parents like, well, why didn't you turn in your homework? And, you know.
You're a bad child. Ooh.
And so it is very hard on the child, and it is very frustrating. It's, you know, then they get hard. It's hard on them. They're hard on themselves mm-hmm. because, you know, like the failing.
Does trying harder help, or does that, with attention deficit, is that not? Really that
it's just
going
to be really way too difficult, I think, for especially for the younger children to really have all that pressure of, you know, making sure you're turning in your homework and then being hard on them when they don't turn it in. I always try and encourage the parents to just have, like, a big manila envelope that they can just stick all their papers in for them at home. The parent will just stick it in an envelope for them and then send it to school with them, and the teacher will get that special folder from or envelope from the child and take it all out and then put all his homework back in later that day. And so that all he has to do is transport it back and forth.
So you're noticing mm-hmm. a problem, an inability to do something, and again, supported with a mental health condition that makes it hard to do stuff like that.
Right, and that's why we try to emphasize to the teachers, you know, that this isn't that he or she is not purposely not turning it in or trying to be defiant. Most of the time.
I just don't want to do my homework.
Yeah. But it's, you know, you have to.
And we know homework's like the most exciting thing in the whole world. It's like thrilling.
But I mean, the teachers, the commitment of the teachers is so important, and it's so hard on them too. I mean, you know, especially now with budget cuts and education, you know, they might have bigger classes. You know, they have all these, 30 kids in a class or maybe sometimes more, hopefully not. But, you know, just. You know, trying to put a lot of that couple of minutes, you know, for this one child means that you're taking it away from the other children, and somehow they have to, you know, to try and meet the needs of all the children.
Right,
I mean,
it is.
As compared to the parents, that's their child. You know, mm-hmm. that's 100% of their time can be towards them.
Outside of work.
Yeah, but when they're at home,
kids.
But you know, they're okay. If there's other kids, maybe 8 other kids. I don't know. There's a lot of families.
Facebook. Hello.
3 kids. But teachers, I mean, it's so important.
Yeah, it is a lot to ask.
And I've always said my hat's off to teachers. Mm-hmm. They do a great job.
Because the classrooms have
so
to be a lot more full than they usually are.
Yeah.
And it is tough. And, you know, that's why, you know, we try and work with a teacher. And, you know, if they can't take a few minutes to do this, or, you know, maybe we can work something else out. So we always are trying to work something out with the teacher and the parent. Because, like I said, the teacher is with the kid more often than the parent is, usually at least Monday through Friday. So, you know, they see them a lot.
Speaking of taking a few minutes to get something done, we're here with Andy Wells and Bianca Soriano. They're mental health rehabilitation technicians for the Children's Imperial County Behavioral Health Program. We're talking about attention deficit and their intervention model. We'll be right back after this top of the hour break. This is Let's Talk About It.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. And our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
Hey, welcome back, and thanks for listening. And we've got some really cool guests today. Bianca Soriano and Andy Wells, and they're both rehab techs. And they're both rehab techs for the Children's Department of Imperial County Behavioral Health. And, you know, you can tell really cool guests by how much time we steal on the break talking to them before we come back and do the show. So these guys are, like, awesome. There's just no doubt about that. 337-8874, welcome back. We're talking about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and a new intervention model that they have over in Children's.
And, you know, as a parent now, earlier you said that this program is voluntary for the performance improvement project.
Right. It's completely optional to the parent.
Is it being offered to all parents right now?
No. It's only offered to parents. For me, since I'm doing the performance improvement project, it is only offered to the parents for the children who were picked by the state that are required, that are needed for the more intensive services. And they give us a list of children that make that list, and we offer it to the parents of those children. Andrew's working on a non-performance improvement project model, which is basically...
Not that they don't want to improve performance.
but yeah.
We're trying to, because
we collect data.
Apply it to other.
Right, because we collect a lot of data for the performance improvement project. We give surveys to the parents as we're doing the program. So we're collecting a lot of data and feedback from the parents. And for Andrew, he's just applying it to his own clients that he has that without having to collect all that data and all that stuff, but mm-hmm. he's still being able to use those same interventions mm-hmm. that he wants.
Are you close enough to the feedback that you've been able to see some positive results from this?
I'm not exactly sure because we just submit a lot of our feedback to our supervisors and managers, and they're the ones collecting everything. So from my personal experience with the kids, I've only completed a whole model
12
with,
weeks,
with
right?
10, 10. Well, 10 visits. A whole model with one kid so far, because some of the other ones that I've started with, either their diagnosis changes, so therefore they don't no longer qualify mm-hmm. for the program anymore because they have to have a primary diagnosis.
I was wondering if that might be some of mm-hmm. the issue, because you've got these kids that were resistant to treatment. Maybe they had some complications in terms of their diagnosis.
Right, and a lot of them have, because you have to have a primary diagnosis of attention deficit disorder. However, a lot of them have secondary diagnoses. And so sometimes, you know, when the doctor is evaluating them at their appointment or, you know, whenever it is, they sometimes he'll switch it and say, you know what, no, he has a primary diagnosis of oppositional defiant disorder, and his secondary diagnosis is attention deficit disorder, so therefore he no longer qualifies mm-hmm. for the model anymore.
Are you looking at specific ages or just anyone who has a primary diagnosis of ADHD?
I think it's just about anybody that qualifies on that. List that the state approves.
Mm-hmm. So diagnostic high-end users.
Right, right. And that are using, you know, a lot of medication support, mm-hmm. a lot of that already have been used, you know, gone through regular case management, you know, maybe attended therapy before, you know, a lot of the intensive services ones that, and I have also had, you know, parents deny the program, refuse the program also, you know, because they felt that they're child was doing really well and didn't really need the program, or sometimes the parents are just too busy at that time, and like I said, you need a lot of commitment and consistency from the parents to meet every week, so they just refused the program at the time. So I've only completed one model with one child. It's actually just this week that we did the last 10th visit. He's made a lot of progress. The other ones that I'm working with, there's a few other ones that are coming to the end of the mm-hmm. program and are doing a lot better. So from my experience, it seems that the model has, you know, helped a lot of the kids.
So what happens after they finish the model?
We discharge them from case management services, and they will continue being on med support if they're receiving medication. They'll continue seeing the doctor, the nurse every, you know, couple months. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. They continue receiving services if they want, and then we conclude the program. We give them a post-family and post-use survey mm-hmm. that we have them complete, and then we do one in the beginning, and then we do one at the very end, and then we submit all of our paperwork.
So how many people have been trained, or how many mental health rehab techs are in the PIP program?
The
PIP. Not the non-PIP.
I want to say about 8 or 10? It's about 8 or 10 people.
There's a lot of them that have...
Right, there's, you know, some in... One in San Pasquale, there's some in Brawley, there's some in El Centro, Calexico. We have them all over the place. So, and we have at least 2 people, I think, per program, or about 2 people. Mm-hmm. So we have them a lot all over.
So if you have some kid who may be having attention deficit and really struggling, and historically they've been off for a lot of services, then wherever you are in the community, you're going to have access to this level of care in all likelihood, it sounds like, more or less.
Yeah, and even for the children that, you know, they start off with that primary diagnosis of ADHD and then they switch. Well, that's when I come into the picture, actually, is because, okay, now this we're deciding that this child is more has more trouble with pervasive developmental disorder versus the ADHD. So now ADHD becomes secondary and pervasive developmental disorder becomes primary. But it still doesn't mean that we aren't going to follow an ADHD model to help with the ADHD portion. And on top of that also help to treat the pervasive developmental. Now, one of the things that as a case manager or a mental health rehab tech that I really enjoy about this program is that it gives us a lot of confidence, you know, in doing our visits. Our visits have, through this model, are very, of course, they're very intensive, but at the same time, they're very structured. They follow a sequence of events that includes the, you know, the education of the parent, not only the diagnosis, but all the way through every intervention we're going to use.
Jump right into, like, maybe the first couple of visits and tell us what kind of stuff specifically goes in there.
Okay, well, during the first visit, that is really your time that you're going to be gathering. You're going to be gathering your frequency, intensity, duration. You're going to be finding out what the behaviors are, in what setting they occur, how often they occur.
The problem-causing behaviors.
Right. Okay. The major impairment, you know, the major impairing symptoms.
Okay.
And you'll go from there. That your parent will rate the forms that we've been provided. We review them, and then we review them with the parent. We show them where, you know, the breakdown of, okay, this is the part that's talking about impulsivity, and this is what you scored. This is the part that discusses their anger impulse control type stuff. Okay, so we know where they're at with that. And then, okay, this is what we're going to do to help you get better. And then we just kind of jump into the model. What I've seen is that those intake things that we do during that first visit for this model, or even outside of this model, gives the parent a sense of, oh, I really know where this is going to go. Like, even though, yeah, the weekly visits, and I'm not held to the weekly visits being a non-PIP, but it's still an option for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives the parent, like, okay, I know where I'm going to go. I know my case manager or my, mm-hmm. you know, my rehab tech knows where we're going with this child. And, like, your second visit would be setting up, okay, some positive reinforcement systems in the home.
And, you know, talking about home visits are very important. I mean, the 10 visits.
Yeah.
And ideally, everything goes as planned.
Mm-hmm.
But if the family has chaos, and there's a lot of other, you're working with also the siblings also have other issues. Maybe they're not in the system, but they have other issues and family problems and marital problems. How are you able to keep the structured home visits when the whole family
is
in
chaos? Right.
So how do you have been able to handle that?
Well, for me,
I mean, and that's normal, and
right,
that's for
right.
them is probably normal. Hey, you know, you're working. You have this 7-year-old who has a diagnosis of ADHD. They're in the PIP program, but then you also have a 16-year-old son who's probably has legal problems,
mm-hmm.
and they come in and out with the friends, and you know, with their whatever in and out, and
And they're disrupting the seven-year-old.
Yeah, and they're disrupting the seven-year-old. Maybe dad
and
is...
And the parents have trauma histories and substance abuse problems.
Yeah.
So,
well,
how do you deal with those problems?
Well, we've seen that. To stay focused, our home visits are actually broken down with a step by step by step by step. So if we do get lost somewhere along the way dealing with all those other problems, then we can always come back, okay, but we're on step three for this visit today. Let's talk about what we need to talk about for that step three, and then we'll deal with the other stuff on the side. Now, if that stuff gets to be too overwhelming, one of the really, really beneficial things, especially that I've noticed with this program, is that we go to supervision. I go to supervision once every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, wait. Yeah, I think once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks. And our licensed social worker, she kind of guides us, like, okay, where are you at with the mull? Where are you seeing snags? So we talked to her about snags, and mm-hmm. She's not only an expert in ADHD, but she's also understands family structure, ways to, she's done, I'm sure,
mm-hmm.
pretty much every thing in the scope of treatment that a therapist would do. So she gives us advice, okay, this is how you can address this, this is how you can address this, and this is how you can stay focused during
mm-hmm.
during your meeting. And it's so awesome.
So home visits, what time are they, after the parents get out of work, or?
It's whenever we can get them. It's whenever we can get them. Sometimes these visits, if it's the first couple ones that aren't incorporating the family meetings, we could be meeting with the parent in El Centro during lunch,
mm-hmm.
Because that's the only time they have for us. They get home at 6:30 at night, and they're tired, and they don't.
What about the siblings? Since, the family's so important.
Right. Well, and a lot of times we encourage the family to, if one is in treatment, but there's other siblings with these other problems, we definitely refer them back to us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get everyone in treatment. Let's get a good wraparound service so that not only the child gets better, but the family gets better and sustains that treatment outcome,
Now, sometimes I know in mental health they toss around the term evidence-based practices, and what they
mean—that's what all we do.
And what they mean are there's like specific models that if they're done in specific ways with specific populations by the specific people who are intended to do the thing, generally lead to pretty consistent positive results. Is this one of those programs, or is this something that we're trying for the purpose of maybe seeing if it's actually something that works for our specific population in this community?
I think this is based a definite experiment, and to see if this is something that we're going to continue because it is making a lot of progress for the children, or if it's something we need to modify. And I think that's why we're having all these surveys and trying to get feedback from the parents to see if this is a model that we're going to continue doing, I guess. We do also do 3 school visits during the program as well, and get feedback from the teachers, because like I said, the teachers spend a lot of time with the kids during the day, so we try and get feedback from the teachers as well with the teacher observation forms that we give them. It's 10 visits with the client, with the children, and then 10 visits with the parent. So sometimes if, the parent, they're working late nights, so they're not home in the afternoons, but then the children's not home in the mornings because they're at school. So sometimes, you have to go to the school and meet with the child there and then, go to the home.
And you've got all these different caregivers that may not be following the reinforcement schedule or any of the other interventions that you've set up too.
Right, and so that sometimes will set you back. If you give the parents or the child something that you need.
The parent's doing it, but they've only got 5% of the day interacting with the kids, so, the 95%
right.
is still kind of going haywire.
Right, so it's difficult. You give them paper and they lose it, or the child will usually be the one losing it because they're
mm-hmm.
very disorganized, like I said. That's why I always try to emphasize, put it on the fridge or somewhere where it won't get lost. And so then the next week when I come back, I can check it. And, I try and give them positive reinforcement by giving them stickers for different things that they do, depending on the age group, obviously. and doing other things, you know, trying to just reward them in any way for their positive behavior.
Is the lack of positive reinforcement pretty consistent amongst these families and environments?
Usually, yes. It can be difficult, and I think it also is because the parents are so overwhelmed with, you know, like I said, the single parent is usually what we work with, and they're so overwhelmed with their children or, you know, trying to work and take care of the children all at the same time and then, you know, help them with their homework and try and doing all these different things.
Well, and to a certain level, it's a skill, though, too.
Right.
To a certain level, it's like, you know, maybe if I was raised by someone who noticed all the endearing qualities I obviously possess.
Right.
And kept bouncing that off of me, then when I grew up, I would kind of carry that forward and be able to dish that off. But, you know, a lot of us grew up with busy working single parents, occupied people with their own distress and problems,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't get a whole ton of honey, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And so for those people, very naturally, there's like no model to begin to have to carry forward. You just kind of fall back on what you were exposed to. And if you were exposed to kind of like this mostly neglectful and sometimes critical way of being with kids, it must be hard to get that to stick. I mean, you guys teach it and you practice it, and monitor it, I suppose, and but you've only got 10 weeks to get it to stick.
So ideally, if you get the child young, you know, it's that all that negativity, they have not heard all that negativity for, you know, if you get somebody that's 12 years old.
But they haven't used enough services, you know, to be a high-end service user either, so he's
well,
kind of got
depends.
A puzzle
sometimes
there.
Sometimes that even really young kids are really very negative,
mm-hmm.
you know, very already having all these suppressive symptoms, and sometimes
it's no fun to be in trouble all the time.
Yeah, and sometimes it's fed off from the parent. Sometimes it's just them because they feel mm-hmm. like they're failing all the time. It just depends.
Not only are you
but
in trouble,
but
it's your fault.
Yeah, but I'm feeling, mm-hmm. you know, somebody that's been in school for 6 years or, you know, or maybe 12 years old, you know, from first to sixth, all they've heard negativity, you know, you're failing, you're this or that.
And you're on
you
the
know,
cusp of sex and drugs, which is also a big deal.
Well, that's the
for people in pain in particular.
Yeah. So they're just, you know, so much.
Mm-hmm. And that's like for some of those parents that are just very overwhelmed and they feel like, you know, they, you know, are pulling their hair out, they don't know what to do, or they're just having a lot of symptoms and impairments themselves, we refer them to the adult clinic, or at least we try to, and say, you know what, you can go into the adult clinic
mm-hmm.
and you can get services yourself if you feel like you need somebody to talk to or, you know, you need to see about your own symptoms and impairments. So we try and refer them to there as well. And, you know, so that way they both can use getting services.
Real challenge, though, because, I mean, just telling somebody how to do something doesn't always change the behavior. I mean, you could take, you know, this whole, like, obesity crisis in America, for example, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
like, obese children, obese adults, et cetera, et cetera. Well, who amongst us doesn't know what the correct eating procedure is and to maintain a stable, healthy weight? We all know. So knowing how to do something and doing it, is there's this kind of separation.
Right. And, you know, with integrating that positive reinforcement into the home, you know, and starting to teach it, the one thing that we usually notice is that even though it might not be something that's been taught, you know, that the child has really missed out on that really positive nurturing that, you know, they might have needed, you step in there and you start with those things. You start telling the child, you know what, you can do it. You know, you have all the skills to do it. You just don't believe that you do. And then you start giving them that and you start showing them, you know, yeah, okay, you might have not turned in your homework 4 days out of this week, but you remembered on Monday to take a huge homework packet and bring it in. That's a success. Don't worry about those other days. Let's look at the one day, and let's try and bring it up to 2 days. You start getting that positive mm-hmm. for that, and those kids just drink it up. They love it.
They've really been starved for it.
Yeah, and see, they respond to it right away. The hardest thing is to getting a parent that's been very used to having to manage negativity, you know, because the school's calling them, hey, your kid, you know, this.
And the parents
know.
Have their own school experiences
yeah, exactly.
that might not have been
yes.
optimal.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And then you're looking at, okay, you know, what do I do here? You know, I'm being called and
yell.
You want me to...
They do yell at the kid.
Yeah, and they're like, well, what do you want me to do?
I'm not
you
even
know?
There. You guys are there.
Yeah. Well, what do you want me to do? I I'm being called 4 times a day while I'm at work because Johnny did this and Johnny did that. But you're coming to my home and telling me that I need to be really positive, really up with him, and really just congratulating from the little things. And it's like, that's when you get to show that you show the parent, okay, well, this is the little bit of time that I've been here, and this is what we've started doing positive-wise.
So the parent needs some of the same encouragement and energy instead of being criticized implicitly even.
Right. You know, show the parent that they actually have all those same strengths that their child has, that the child has believed that they don't have. The parent has also underwent a similar process of believing that for some reason they haven't really been capable of raising this child appropriately. So they are in a similar situation with the child. They're not doing well. Themselves.
The parents also, besides the child getting positive reinforcement, also the parent gets from you guys.
Right. And they follow through with the interventions of the meeting. And we come and we're just like, you know what, that's awesome. Because it's really awesome for us to see that compliance to treatment. So we're going to tell them right away, you know, wow, I really appreciate it. And what did you notice? And usually they'll say, you know, we tried this and my child did this and I was just so surprised. And it was like, you know what? We start showing them that, hey, you can be surprised every day just like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can have pleasant surprises all the time instead of that weight of the negativity when you walk in the door.
What else? What did he do today?
Oh, gosh. What am I going to do?
Do they get some sort of clever parting gifts at the end of this 10 weeks that allow them to kind of reconnect to this moment of progress and continue to grow into it or to kind of reset themselves or, you know?
Well, we always provide all the parents with a booklet that we were given, and it's an ADHD booklet that gives you a lot of information about just the diagnosis, about the different medications that are treated for that diagnosis, you know, what parents can do for that kind of, a kid with that kind of diagnosis, what are the symptoms, that kind of, it's just a bunch of information. So we give them that booklet so that way they can read it over, even with the child, because it's easy reading, it's not super difficult, and they can read it over with them, and that way they can become familiar with the diagnosis and always know about it. We do provide them with the family meetings, handout, so that way they can keep that handout and always use it. And on that handout, it tells you exactly step by step how to conduct the family meetings and also, you know, different topics that they can talk about. And so that's another form that we leave with them with. We leave them with all the different techniques and interventions that we provided to them, because all the ones that we teach this the child, like the deep breathing, the progressive muscle relaxation, they teach the parent how to do it as well.
Hey, which one of us doesn't really need a nice massage at the end of a long, stressful day?
So we teach them how to do that, and so they walk away with a lot of information and a lot of interventions and techniques that we provided to them. And so I always encourage, you know, just try and keep using those, you know, even when we're not here, because they can't always have a case manager always there helping them. They have to take with them what they learned and apply it.
They have to be their own inner case manager.
Right.
And really what I'm hearing out of this is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, regardless of where it fits on the continuum of really, 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 really impairing, bad, or, you know, not so bad, is basically a life management issue that once you become aware of, you begin to take specific steps to manage in ways that reduce the distractions and chaos and harm and problems associated with the disorder. Just like we, you know, if you couldn't see words up close, you'd get reading glasses, or you'd, you know, vainly hold your arm further and further away from your body, like I do. But it sounds like that's where you're going with this, and you've developed some specific high potential payoff management strategies that you're intensively teaching in this 10-week program, and hoping that those A, bear fruit in that 10 weeks, but then B, somehow continue and become part of the regular interactive processes of both the parents and the kids, and maybe even the schools.
Right.
Yeah, cool. Very cool.
Good.
Scott, something else I kind of wanted to add was that you had talked about, you know, what do these kids take away from this thing? Like, do they get a prize? Do they get a certificate saying that I completed the ADHD
model? Well, I would like a handy little guide of things to do.
There's
self-esteem
now.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing that I noticed that when our kids transition out of the mental health rehab tech services,
yeah.
You know, and we're talking about with the success of these programs, you know, what I see these kids taking away from is that period in time where we were working really hard, not only the self-esteem of the fact that I tried really hard during this time and did it, but there's other things that come into play, like their parents are saving those their grades. Oh, wow, you know, during this part, this is the best grades that he's ever received. Or mm-hmm. my child got student of the month, you know, and it becomes a really big deal for this family, especially they've been struggling.
They haven't had a lot of that.
Right.
Historically.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes if the parents are even able to go to these award ceremonies, they're hoping that their child will bring home that award, and it never happens. And at the same end, the child's sitting there hoping that maybe, just maybe, the teacher has overlooked the fact that he's got out of his seat 20 times yesterday and might be giving him a certificate for doing well. But whereas at the end, these kids are able to manage that extreme impulse, and they're taking home stuff like that. And they're, you know, even though we might not be providing them with something quantitative, you know, so, but they are getting that qualitative. They are getting that actual chunk of their life with really great stuff in it. So I think that's
you know, hats off to both of you for what you're doing.
Yes,
I mean, every kid's life that we change is perhaps even a whole family turned around from this kind of generational chaos and distress and tough lives, basically. And, you know,
right.
Nobody wants to have a tough life.
I thought to all the rehab techs and everybody.
Yeah, but to see, they weren't cool enough to come on the radio.
I know. You guys were. I know.
Commitment.
So cool to see you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for coming aboard.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. And if you want, again, podcast,
exactly.
KXORadio.com to catch back up on this stuff and share it with your friends and family.
And teachers and family members.
Absolutely.
And the rest of the community, neighbors.
And otherwise, join us next week. 7:30 Friday, Thursday morning. Another great show. This is Scott.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.